It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Last week, travel contributor Elaine LaBaume recommended some presidential homes worth visiting. However, with 44 presidents, there are more presidential residences worth visiting throughout the United States. Joining us, as she does at this time each week, is Elaine LaBaume, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town. Elaine, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, I'm a little bit chilly. Snowing out there, but it's all good and I'm happy
to
be here.
You made it through the snow.
Made
it through. Goodness. Okay, New Girl, the presidential tour continues. But first, you would like to answer a couple of questions that came up after last week's segment.
Yes, you had a question for me that I didn't have an immediate answer for, and that was James Buchanan the only U.S. president born in Pennsylvania? And in fact, he was in Mercersburg. And as I did a little bit more research on where the presidents were born, what I learned, which I thought was really neat, and we barely touched on it, is that there were almost all the presidents were born east of the Mississippi. Only 8 of them have been born west of the Mississippi.
Huh.
Herbert Hoover in Iowa, Harry Truman in Missouri, Ike and LBJ, both from Texas. Nixon.
Ike is from Texas?
From Texas.
I did not know that.
He is. I think it's Denison County, Texas. Nixon and Yorba Linda, California. Gerald Ford, born in Omaha, Nebraska. Many may think it's Michigan because he's very closely associated with Michigan.
Well, he went there.
Yes, that's right, and served for the U.S. House from there, and vice president and whatnot. Omaha,
Nebraska.
He was
a football star at Michigan.
That's right. I remember. Bill Clinton from Hope, of course, Arkansas, and Barack Obama from Honolulu, Hawaii. So 8 presidents west of the Mississippi, the rest of the gang east of the Mississippi, which is why we have so many presidential homes and birthplaces and sites to visit in these parts.
And so that's pretty much where you're sending us.
Yes.
And these would all be within driving distance?
I have come to learn that living in Pittsburgh now. You can drive pretty much anywhere within a day and a half. Yep.
All right. Well, on the tour today, we're starting with the home not of a president, but of a first lady, in this case, Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes, and this is Val Kill. The words are based on Valkill, which is Dutch for Valley Stream. And this was her home. Obviously, she and FDR shared Springwood in Hyde Park, New York. But she wanted to have her own place to go to once the big house was closed for the winter. And so the president arranged to have this stone cottage built for her on the grounds. A couple years after that, actually, Eleanor and some of her friends built the Valkill Industries, which was an experimental furniture company that was designed to have, you know, farmers and other locals be able to work on other industries during the time of the year. And they did these reproduction early American furnishings that were apparently of very high quality. And that was a successful business for a long time. It operated from 26 to 1936. At that point, it was closed, and that Valkill Industries was turned into Eleanor's cottage, which she lived in, I believe, until her death. Now, you say cottage. I mean, the place had 7 bedrooms, 2 living rooms, you know, sleeping porches, pools, lovely grounds, stables for horses. So we use the term cottage loosely here. But you can still visit both properties, Valkill Cottage and the Stone Cottage, and they're really neat, and they speak so much to the legacy of a woman who was so much more than a first lady. You know, she was a diplomat and supported, you know, women's rights and, you know, African-American rights and whatnot. She was really a neat individual. You can learn a lot about her by going to Valkill.
Definitely a fascinating woman.
Mm-hmm.
Montpelier was the home, mansion of James and Dolly Madison.
Yeah, and you know, here we are just on the eve of Valentine's Day, and talk about a sweet couple. Lovebirds, the two of them. He was, you know, he also very formidable. And I should say right off the top, we're not talking Montpelier, Vermont here. We're talking, that's just the name of the property. It's right near Charlottesville, Virginia, actually in a little town called Orange, Virginia. Madison is considered by many to have been the father of the Constitution, you know, one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. He was Thomas Jefferson's Secretary of State before his 2 terms as president. His wife, Dolly Madison, considered one of the premier hostesses in Washington, D.C.
Everybody knows that name.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. It still lives on, yeah, and her legacy as well lives on. When they left D.C., they retired to this amazing plantation, 2,600 acres in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's this massive colonial structure. It includes this presidential library, a lot of his papers. And this was a prolific, you know, writer and statesman. So there's a lot to see there. Gorgeous formal gardens that were started when he was there, but improved upon by Annie DuPont in the early 1900s. And there's also, I love this, a 200-acre old-growth forest with trails on the property. So you could, this is the kind of place you could spend the day. It's just a lovely, lovely setting.
The Franklin Pierce Manse is fairly modest when compared to other presidential homes of the era. What about it?
Indeed, yeah. I mean, if you asked anybody, what can you tell me about Franklin Pierce? Probably wouldn't have a whole lot to say. He's the 14th president of the United States from Concord, New Hampshire. This was the only home that he ever lived in. He was born there, and that was his home. Very modest structure. He was in the U.S. House and the Senate before he became president.
14th president.
14th
so
president.
So we're talking before the Civil War. We're talking...
I believe so, yes. A personal note, he had three sons, and all of them died as children. I just thought that was heartbreaking. The home actually was moved from its original location in the center of town, just outside of town now, a Greek Revival structure. And this is not one where you're going to spend the entire day. It's a, you know, it's just a sort of a quick sort of stop. But the neat thing about going to this part of the world this time of year, if you're so inclined, is that there's lots of wonderful skiing in and around New Hampshire and lots of other things to do. So this is the kind of thing where you'd want to have this just be sort of a side trip part of being in that part of the world.
We are talking with our travel contributor, Elaine LaBaum, who tweets about food and travel under the Twitter handle New Girl in Town. And this is part two of her tour of presidential residences. President's Day is Monday. For some of us, that's a long weekend. It gives you time to travel, even with the bad weather. And so these are places that would be within driving distance of Pittsburgh. And our next stop, going a little farther north here, the Calvin Coolidge Historic Site in Vermont. It's simple and low-key, a lot like the man it honors.
Absolutely. They didn't call him Silent Cal for nothing. Very low-key. And apparently his wife was the exact opposite. She was this effusive, very gracious woman. And
that's often the case, isn't
it? It is. I think that's the case in my personal situation as
I was
well.
Going to say. But
my husband, far more low-key. Again, Plymouth, Vermont. So really not that far from the Franklin Pierce Manse in New Hampshire. I mean, you could get to, you know, between the two of these, you could get there in a few hours, if that. More skiing options for you there.
Sure, right.
You should go ski at Stowe when
or
you're
Killington.
Or Killington, all those great places, and goodness knows the weather's good for it.
I must ask you, Calvin Coolidge, he has a connection to Vermont?
Yes, he was born there.
Really?
In Plymouth, Vermont. Absolutely.
I did not know that.
His birthplace, home of the 30th president. Talk about a small town, 619 people. At last count that I could find in Plymouth, Vermont. And actually, this when they say this is the Calvin Coolidge homestead, it's because they have taken a number of the properties in the town and preserve them as part of the presidential home. So, you know, the little small church in the town, the general store, homes of friends and relatives of the president have all been restored and are part of this visit that you can make. He was a governor of Massachusetts at one point, a vice president, and he ascended to the presidency when Warren Harding died. And actually, he happened to be in his home in Vermont when he got this news. And his father, who was a notary public, was the one who swore him in as president. I think it was like at 2:30 in the morning or something like that. So kind of a neat story there, too. The home itself is very modest, as was the man. But, you know, they've made it something of an interactive experience, you know, put some modern touches in on it now. So you can learn a lot about a fellow who didn't make a lot of waves, but there was definitely stuff going on underneath the surface.
So interactive meaning you can put on the recording of his speeches, which I think lasts about, what, 25, 25 seconds.
That's a good point. There's an audio tour. Maybe it's his wife who's quoted on the audio tour.
And he doesn't, you know, for a man that quiet, it doesn't you know, it's hard to picture him as a New Englander. New Englanders generally tend to be a little bit more verbose.
Depending. You know, I'm from Connecticut, so I'm a New Englander myself.
Yeah, and you don't talk a lot.
No, but I've spent enough time in, you know, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine. Okay, they're pretty stoic in Maine. There you go. There's New England stoicism.
Well, last stop on the tour here, the Hermitage, Andrew Jackson's home, akin to a landed estate.
Yeah, we're definitely ending with a bang here with the Hermitage. And I guess the term Hermitage at the time somewhat referred to a rural retreat. And actually, this property, this homestead, had very humble beginnings. I guess Andrew Jackson had gotten himself into some debt trouble as a younger man. And so he had to sell a nice property that he had and then bought this one, which basically just had a modest log house on it. And over time, you know, he expanded it a little bit. There was acreage there that could be farmed for cotton. And over time, he built it into a very successful cotton farming operation. And it morphed, you know, from its early beginnings, maybe a couple of hundred acres, into a 1,000-acre estate that had a distillery and a dairy. There were a lot of things going on there. And eventually, there was also room for his racehorses, which he groomed. He was a man of many appetites, as they say. But the original federal-style brick mansion that he built was built in 1821. He took offices in 1829 as our seventh president. And then in 1831, he did a major expansion, completely changing this property into, you know, a large Greek Revival style home with, you know, countless wings and very grand and nothing but the finest finishes, you know, and wallpapers and furnishings and whatnot. At the time of his death in 1845, there were actually 150 slaves operating the cotton plantation in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's a big property, you know, rented out these days for weddings and corporate events. But you can still get a sense of the man and his experience when you visit the Hermitage.
Elaine LaBaum is our travel correspondent. Elaine, as always, thank you. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We'll see you again tomorrow.